Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome everyone, welcome, welcome. Well, today we're talking about the pursuit of bliss and adventure, and who doesn't want both of those in their life? Years ago, I took a fantastic course at college called The Power of Myth with Joseph Campbell, and it literally changed my life. And Joseph Campbell's mantra, for those of you who don't know, was follow your bliss. And I adopted that mantra to transform my life. My first guests today are a married couple, and they certainly had a huge transformation in their life in the pursuit of their bliss and adventure. And my second guest today is Sean Musher, who says happy is good, bliss is better. And we'll hear more from him. He's a spiritual leader and New Thought minister based in Los Angeles, and he's going to talk to us about what he calls the bliss experiment. But first, I'm very pleased to welcome Dave Baskill and Deborah Corbett to the show today. Just over 3 years ago, they changed their lives by leaving lucrative careers and following their dreams to become full-time adventure travelers, photographers, bloggers, and speakers. They're recognized as Canada's adventure couple, and their aim is to inspire everyone to get out and to explore, to live their dreams. Together, they co-founded The Planet D, a popular travel blog, and some of their many trips include a cycling race from Cairo to Cape Town, a 14,000-kilometer rally from London to Mongolia, and exploring Antarctica by kayak. They live by their motto, which is adventure is for everyone, and they've appeared or been featured on CTV Canada, CBC Radio, Fox News, Lonely Planet, The Huffington Post, and the BBC, and more. Dave and Deb, welcome to the show today.
Hi, Vicki. Thanks for having us.
It's good to talk to you because I just get lost in your website. I just get lost with all the beautiful pictures and the commentary, and you just seem to both be having such a great deal of fun, Deb. Is that true?
We've been having a great time the past 3 years, and we were people who looked for our changed our lives later in life. We're 40 years old, and it's been the best thing we ever did to never give up. And like you said, just keep searching for your bliss. And I love that you use that word, because we were just recently featured in a photo campaign with Expedia.com saying, find your bliss. I can't believe the coincidence.
Well, there you go. We're all in search of it.
Looking for that bliss.
Right. So I understand, Dave, I was looking at the website and you said that you've never, even as a couple, led an ordinary life, really. You met in Toronto. You've been married for 14 years. But just a year into your relationship, you upped and moved into the film industry. Talk to us a little bit about your background in that.
Yeah, I think that we've always been sort of, if you want to use the word transient, but we've always been people who have always kept moving around and searching for something better. When we first met, it was only a short time after that, maybe a year and a half or so, that we ended up moving out. We basically sold everything we owned and moved out to Vancouver and out to the West Coast. And we didn't know anybody out there or anything like that. Didn't have a job, just went out there, just wanted to change our lives and get away from here. So that was sort of like the first time we took a step to change our lives. And we lived out there for 3 years. And, you know, again, we were, I guess, a little bit bored with what was going on, and we wanted to change things up, so we ended up moving back to Toronto. So I think it's sort of something that's in both of our bloods, that we always want to keep striving for more and looking for that place in life where we're most happiest. And I'm so glad that we continued to do that all our life, because, you know, because we kept searching, we ended up finding out what we love and doing what we love and doing it together. So really everything sort of came to fruition 3 years ago, where all of our dreams and what we've been searching for sort of all came together. So we were very, very fortunate to be able to find that, not only together, but to actually find it. Because I think that's a thing that people think, you know, maybe you can't do that, but you can.
Right. And we're going to talk about, you know, finding your bliss later in the show today. So this is a great segue into it. But you just got back from running the bulls, you guys. I mean, yeah, I think you went to Hawaii and then you went to Spain. And I, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show is I love talking to people who, as Dave just said, took the time to really think about what you want to do with your lives. And now you're living this dream. And I'm sure it's not all roses. We can talk about some of those those things later. But I love talking to people who really take the time to do this because we do only have one life and, you know, we want to make the most of it. So worse that you were kind of bored, feeling in a rut. How did you make the transition into doing what you're doing now?
Yeah, it's been amazing. We are like, it is just like a dream what we've chosen to do right now. And we never thought that we could be those people that live the dream. I always looked at other people and went, oh, how do they do that? How do they do what they love? And I think we made the transition, like Dave said, because we never stopped searching. And it all started in 2000. It was a slow transition for us when we took our first trip to Thailand, where we took five weeks there just traveling around. And at that time, that was a long time for us to be traveling. But we experienced all these new things like rock climbing and sea kayaking and hiking in the jungle. And we realized that, hey, there's more to life than just going to the movies and going out to eat and shopping. And it really just changed everything. And it sparked this yearning for adventure. And then over the years, we started just traveling, taking a few months off. Luckily for us, we worked in the film industry as freelancers, so we had winters off. And being up here in Canada, you like to escape the winters. So we took off for months at a time for the past over 8 years. And then that's when we finally said, let's make this a living. We just love being together, and we love doing this. And we took a huge risk, but it really paid off. And now we're living the dream that we never thought possible.
Right. Does it ever get stale? I mean, you know, traveling is not as easy as it was 10, 15 years ago. Does it ever get tiresome for you?
I think tiresome would be, I mean, it gets tiring. I don't think tiresome is probably the best word, but tiring for sure, because you're on the road all the time. But the great thing about traveling is that you get to experience a new culture, and there's always something new right around the corner. And I think that's what not only has made our life more fulfilling, but it's also kept our relationship together. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, traveling 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and being together 365 days a year, it takes its toll on a relationship. And you sort of have to be, you have to be able to talk things out. You have to be able to communicate. And I think that's made our relationship grow better as well. And it doesn't get tiring. I love just meeting new people, and I think that's what travel's all about. You get outside of your comfort zone just a little bit.
Right.
You know, like our motto is adventure is for everyone, because adventure is different for everybody. Adventure can be going in a market in Marrakesh. It can be, you know, the first time you step off a train in India. It doesn't have to be, you know, jumping out of a plane or bungee jumping in New Zealand. It can be that, but it's different for everybody. And I think that's an important thing that we want to point out, that adventure is for everybody. If you just step out of your comfort zone just a little bit, then you'll find it will enrich your life to immense position.
Yeah, and I think personally that travel, when you do it the way that you guys do it, which is, you know, you really immerse yourself into the culture, is such a huge learning opportunity. It's the best, greatest education you can have.
Yeah, it really is. And that was when Dave was talking, I wanted to say something we do as well is travel slow. And that's how it doesn't get so tiresome. When you feel the fatigue of travel, just stop somewhere for a while and just sit down and enjoy it. And then you're not going to get tired of it. You know, we'll just spend like about a month in a place relaxing on the beach and things like that. And that's the way to really immerse yourself and make new friends there and feel at home. And that's the way we love to travel. We've made some amazing friends in Sri Lanka and in India and in Thailand, where you just feel like you're at home while you're on the road rather than just a visitor.
Right, right. And as I mentioned earlier, you just got back from Spain. Tell us what that was like.
Well, in Spain, we were running with the bulls. It was quite an exhilarating experience, to put it mildly, I would say, to put yourself in front of, or in our case, beside 10 running bulls down down a very narrow street in Pamplona was exhilarating, frightening,
terrifying.
Amazing, terrifying, you know, all those emotions all wrapped up into one. I don't think I've really experienced something like like that. It's so different than any other kind of adventure that we've done. And you know, running into that at the end there, into the bull ring, you're just all these emotions coming together. It was very, very incredible.
I saw a really cute video on your website about your preparation for that.
Oh, yes, we had to prepare. You know, you have to know how to tuck and roll, and you have to know how to look behind your shoulders. That's, you know, months of training to do that.
Yeah, stretching the neck so you can whip it round and make sure the bull's not right behind you.
Exactly. Visit your chiropractor before you go, and you're all good.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue talking with Dave and Deb, Canada's adventure couple. Please do stay with us.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard approved life jacket and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Making a difference, one word at a time.
1150KKNW.com. Your connection to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, and we're talking about one of my favorite subjects, travel, although I'd rather be doing it than talking about it. We're talking in this segment with Canada's adventure couple. They've got an incredibly popular blog called The Planet TD, theplanetd.com. And we'll give that out again before the end of the show. And I read on there that travel defined you, Dave and Deb, more than your careers, and that's why they both searched for ways to turn their passion around so that they could turn worldwide adventures into a lifestyle and career for themselves. So I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the best trips you've had. Do you have a favorite? Is it hard to pull out a favorite?
It is hard to pull out a favorite just because I love so many places for so many different reasons. But, I mean, right now, as it stands, I would have to say Antarctica. We went there in January, February of this year with Quark Expeditions, and it was absolutely amazing. I'm a photographer, so from my standpoint, from a photography standpoint, it was just, you know, it was like being on Mars. It was like being on another planet. And to be in a place that is so remote and unpopulated, and being able to get up close, with wildlife and have them come up to you and not be afraid of you is just a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity and something that really touches you and touches your soul when you're thinking about, you know, you look around at the world and the city you live in and the places you visit, and it really has an impact on you when you look around this barren landscape. And not only did we get to feel that, but we got to kayak there. So it was one of the most amazing destinations to go to, and it was one of the most amazing adventures that we ever had. Being able to sit in there in a kayak and have a minke whale come up right behind you in a kayak and paddle so close to a leopard seal. It really, really was moments in there that I'll never forget for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I can imagine. I've seen a lot of footage, raw footage from Antarctica, and it just looks staggeringly beautiful. Is it hard for you when you've been on a trip like that, when in such beauty, such wilderness, to come back to, quote, civilization?
It used to be very hard for us. That's a big reason why we got into travel. But now that we've been traveling full time for the past 3 years, we really look forward to coming home and seeing our friends and family. So we have a nice balance happening now that we get to go and experience these spectacular places and then come home and, you know, and just have the time to visit our friends and family, because we're not going back to our jobs. We do this as a full-time career now, so we can actually come home and just actually enjoy being home with the people that we love.
Yeah, I think travel has actually made us appreciate a little bit more what we have at home than before. You know how you sort of take for granted what you have when you're at home, and when you get out there and travel, it sort of makes you appreciate a little bit more the life you have back at home than if you had just stayed in one place and sort of just, you know, eased into a routine.
Right, right. So, Deb, do you have a favorite place, or would yours be Antarctica too?
I would have to say New Zealand was pretty spectacular. For adventure-seeking, thrill-seekers like us, we just loved it. We did everything there from fly a stunt plane to, but Dave did the bungee jump in one of the world's highest bungee jumps, and walk on glaciers and swim with dolphins. It's a pretty amazing place. In a small area, too, so you can see a lot of the country in a short amount of time, because it's a tiny country with just this diverse landscape, and I can understand why Peter Jackson chose Lord of the Rings for the setting there, because you just feel like
yes.
You're in Middle Earth the whole time.
Yes, I couldn't imagine him doing that anywhere else now.
No, it's beautiful.
I read in the Huffington Post a blog, they were actually rating you amongst one of the top 10 travel blogs, and I read that you said India is the most overrated country. Do you still think that, and if so, why?
Oh, they always ask us those. Everyone has to ask, what is the, you know, those are the questions, and you're like, oh, what's one of the ones? It was one of our least favorite places, but other people will strongly disagree with us, and they loved India. We gave it 3 months of our time and tried really hard. But we just didn't fall in love with India like everyone else did. The people we definitely loved. We made some great friends there and just met some of the most heartwarming and welcoming people we've ever met when we've been in our travels. But India just didn't. We were one of those people that weren't wowed by the Taj Mahal, I'm afraid.
Right. Now,
it's very crowded, very busy, and just overrun with tourists. And I'm sure there's parts we haven't seen yet, but it just wasn't for us.
Right. Well, let's talk about Africa for a little while, because I know you did a huge cycling race there. Deb, I understand you became the women's champion of the race, and Dave won the prestigious title of cycling every fabulous inch of Africa.
Yes.
So tell us about that race. It ran from what, Cairo?
Yeah, it runs from Cairo to Cape Town. It's 12,000 kilometers. It took us 4 months to do, and we went through 9 countries. So, and that really was the adventure that kicked it all off for the Planet D. That's when we sort of really decided to do something epic. Our whole idea for the Planet D in the beginning was to get a television show, and this was going to be the kickoff for that. We knew that we needed to do something epic to set ourselves apart from everybody else, and we thought, hey, cycling from Cairo to Cape Town, that's pretty epic.
That's pretty epic, yeah.
That should do it.
Yeah.
It was a very interesting race. It's a stage race, so it's a cumulative time, kind of like the Tour de France that just finished. And, wow, it really tests you mentally, physically, emotionally, on every single level. It really was an incredible travel experience.
Yeah, you can see why you have to. I've heard this from other couples who travel extensively like you do, that they really have to work on their communication skills together and that it's developed their relationship, because you've got enough hardships along the way. You certainly don't want to be bickering amongst each other.
Definitely. That trip, we spent 4 months in a two-man tent after riding on a bicycle for 8 hours a day. So, yeah, it was really hard emotionally. But if as long as you can communicate and as long as you can fight and let it go afterwards and get it over with,
That's the key.
One of the other trips that I really thought was cool was you drove from London in the Mongol rally. And I had watched Ewan McGregor go on his motorcycle trip around the world. And some of those roads were just incredible. You had to obviously go along some of those. They're not even roads. You can't call them roads.
No.
Yes, we love crossing epic countries, that's for sure. And what we loved about the Mongol Rally is you have to do it in a car that's completely inappropriate. So we did it in this little Nissan Almera. And once you get to countries like Kazakhstan and Mongolia, there really are no roads. And you're just using your map and your compass, trying to figure out the way to get there and following dirt trails through the Gobi Desert. Or if you do find tarmac somewhere that you can actually drive on, it's normally melted because you're in these extremely hot countries and it's buckling and full of potholes. So our car really took a licking. We broke a shock. We had punctures like crazy. We broke our gear shift. Just everything started falling apart near the end. But we made it and we survived.
And now you can laugh about it, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nothing can really explain the feeling of pulling up in Mongolia and there's like 13 paths strung out, spreading in different directions in front of you, and you have to choose one to go at. So,
and hope that you go in the right direction. And we went in the wrong direction many times.
I'm sure. I think, that Ewan McGregor did on his trip when he went on there too. Well, let's talk about people a minute, because you run into so many different populations. And I've heard that the people of Mongolia are just wonderful. Did you have that same experience?
We really did. People of Mongolia, it's kind of hard to express in words the kind of hospitality that you receive when you're there. In the Mongol Rally, we camped. So, we'd be camping just on the side of the road. And I can't even tell you how many times we got hospitality from them. One time in particular, I remember we were sitting, we pulled off. It was getting close. It was almost nighttime. The sun was setting. And you could see off in the distance this horse rider in the distance. And we're wondering, where is that coming from? You know, is he coming this way? Is he coming to kick us off? Anyway, he rode up, and it was a young boy who had obviously been sent out by his parents to come out and bring us arag, which is basically their kind of fermented mare's milk, and some cheese. So he had ridden all the way across the steppe there to come out and sit down and just give us some cheese and some arag.
Yeah.
So, and we experienced that all across Mongolia.
Now, I've heard that before, that they just appear out of nowhere to bring you food and stuff. But did you like that mare's milk? Because I've also heard that's pretty nasty stuff.
It is a little bit nasty. It's kind of like
it's an acquired taste.
Yogurt, but a little bitter and sour. But you drink it and you chew on the cheese and you smile.
Yeah, it's an acquired taste.
They love it, so
yeah.
That's the great thing.
So,
but we had quite the collection of that cheese. It lasts a long time.
Yeah.
And
right.
We had it last all the way to Ulaanbaatar.
Wonderful. And what about food? Did you have what's the most unusual food that you've tried on your travels?
Oh, I would have to say it would be snake in Vietnam. Mm. That's the most. We're not overly crazy when it comes to food. We've been to Peru but didn't try the guinea pig, and we've been to China and didn't try any of the crazy things that they eat there. Like, but we saw a lot of scorpions on sticks and things like that. But we've had quite a few bugs in our travel careers.
You have. You'd like to eat bugs.
Yeah, some bugs are pretty good. You put a little salt on them and fry them up. And they're
You're chowing good. Down those termites in Jamaica pretty good.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah, I don't mind the bugs.
So let's talk a little bit about the business side of things, because this is your career. You decided to set up a blog. And Dave, you said earlier that you're the photographer. Who does the writing for the blog?
I do the writing, and Dave does the photography, and we both split the social media. That's also a big part of blogging in today's world. You have to be present on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and Pinterest, all of those sort of things. So it's really a full-time career being out there blogging.
Right. And how do you manage that while you're actually traveling? Because I think that's, for a lot of people, that gets in the way.
Yeah, you have to be, it's very much about time management. So you have to, we make sure what we do is we'll go and travel for, say, a week or even a little bit shorter, and then sit down and take some time and write about it. And that's sort of the benefit of traveling for longer periods of time, so that we don't want to miss out on the adventures, and we don't want to miss out on why we started traveling in the first place. And I think that's the hardest thing for people to juggle is time management. So we've tested different things over the 3 years and found what works best is to travel, do the adventures, enjoy yourself, and then take the time, put that time in so that you can sit down, write about it, sort photographs, do all this kind of stuff. So you have to sort of put that other week in there as well to do the business side of
things.
Yeah, and we schedule all of our posts in advance so that we can actually just go and enjoy ourselves and not worry about having to get back to the hotel to write a blog post that night.
Right, right. And what kind of advice would you give to somebody who's listening now and thinking, well, geez, I want to do something like this? Because you have one of the most popular travel blogs, I think. I did a lot of research on this, and yours just kept popping up time and time again.
Oh, thank you so much.
But
I would say go into it with a plan. We went into this with a plan. As Dave said earlier, we wanted a TV show to happen. But when that didn't happen, we really thought about how to make the blog work. So we put together a business plan of what we wanted our end game to be. So know what you want to do. Do you want to write for National Geographic? Do you want to be a spokesperson? Do you want to have a TV show? We started thinking about it that we wanted to be a brand that companies would want to work with and be a celebrity in our own right online. We decided, let's go for blogging 100% and be that really strong niche that companies would want to work with. And that paid off for us, and that's how we make our living now. We partner with companies, and we have sponsorship. And I think people just need to focus on what they want to do with it and what they love about travel that makes them different. We love adventure and being together, and everyone loves something unique about travel. So you want to be unique and stand out. And what is it that you love? Because if you love what you're doing, you can't fail, because you'll eventually make it one day. You'll persevere until it happens.
Right. That's what, following your bliss is all about. Yeah,
exactly.
I read in an article, or maybe it was a blog, that Dave had said one of the reasons he thinks your blog is so successful is because you're open to talking about your fears and doubts and letting people know that everything is not always roses. So tell us a little bit about what kind of difficulties you might encounter.
Well, there's lots of kind of difficulties we have encountered, from our relationship being the number one thing, and sort of making sure that there's communications there. That's always been a very conscious thing. And also, you know, thinking about, there's always lots of stumbling blocks of thinking about where you're going to travel. You have to think about exactly where you're going to travel, because if you don't make that right decision, it can really have an effect on you.
And we'll talk about if we're afraid. When we're going on to climb to Mount Everest Base Camp, if I'm afraid, I've heard people that are afraid of walking across the suspension bridges. Hey, I was too, so I talked about that. We're not superhuman. We don't know what everything is, so we'll talk about our fears about it coming up. We talked about running with the bulls coming up, going, I don't know if I can do this. We don't just put on a face and say, hey, we can do everything. It's like, nope, I'm going into something I've never tried before, and I'm going to talk to you about what I'm afraid of. And most likely other people can relate too, because everyone's afraid of something. So we share that fear of any new travel we're going into. We were afraid in the Mongol rally. We were afraid when we were cycling Africa of snakes, and we talked about that. So that's the things that we talk about.
Right.
Anything that's the fear of the unknown. But
right.
Just go for it, and half the time when you get there, it's not so scary.
Yeah, and you say right on your website, you don't have to be an uber athlete, ultra rich, or an adrenaline junkie to be an adventurer. Just get out there.
Exactly.
Start doing it. So final words you'd like to leave our listeners with today.
Oh, final word. I think pursue your passion. It's a wonderful feeling to be able to go out there and do something that you truly love and look forward to getting up in the morning. I've heard people say this so many times in my life, and I never understood it until a few years ago. And I go, now I get it. This is what life is all about. I used to think about money. I used to think about what I would have. And now I'm going, it's okay if I don't have the money yet, or if I'm not that ultra-rich person. I'm living the life that I've always wanted to live, and I enjoy every moment of it, and that's what's important.
Mm. Well, what about you, Dave?
I agree with Deb. Definitely, she took my answer.
as we might expect.
I would also say, don't forget to bring it home. I think that was one of the main things that sort of helped us into this career is that, you know, everything we tried at home, or tried while we traveled, we brought home. So when we tried mountain biking while we were somewhere, then we brought that home, and it allowed us to change our life at home as well. You don't have to go out there and travel full time like us to enjoy travel. What's most important is that you bring those experiences home and apply them to your life back here.
Right, right. Now, if people want to look at your website, now let me give that to them again. It's theplanetd.com. What are some of your favorite stories on there that you'd recommend they look at? Because there's so much on here. There's so many stories. The photography is just beautiful.
Yeah, I was just going to brag about Dave's photography. If you go right to the top in the photo stories, he has some incredible photos of photo stories about our time at Petra and Jordan that people just love, and Antarctica and photos, and Africa. And it's right there. We have it at the top, photo stories, and they're really incredible. And we have a lot of personal. We have an inspiration series going on where people talk to us about how travel changed them. So it's not just us talking. It's other people who have submitted their stories about how travel has changed them and how it inspired them to live a better life and how they were inspired to make changes in their lives. So we have a few different categories there. We try to really inspire our photography. I just really love, and we always like to throw in a little bit of adventure as well. So if you go to our adventures page, we've got all of our adventures wrapped up in there, and you can just follow along the journey.
Yeah.
Start to finish.
I recommend people just sit down with a nice cup of tea or coffee. and spend a little while visiting there. You say, again, adventure is for everyone is your motto, and you are known as Canada's adventure couple. I thank you so much for being with us. I'm glad we managed to connect, because I know you guys are on the road a lot.
Yes, thank you so much for having us. We had a great time.
Thank you.
All right. Well, we'll be right back with my next guest. Please do stay with us. We're talking about following your bliss today. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Cornerstone Home Lending in Duval, we cover the world of animals. This week, July 14th, it's a Dr. Nell Sunday. Dr. Nels Rasmussen from Nels Healing Ministry joins us in the studio. He's a chiropractor and a very gifted best bioenergetic synchronization technique practitioner, and he's got a new plan for doing remote healings on the show. So plan to give us a call. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicki St. Clair.
For the people, by the people. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Well, I might take a boat or I'll take a plane. I might hitch
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And we're talking about bliss. We talked about bliss and adventure in the first segment. We're going to talk about bliss and spirituality and new thought in the second segment today. My guest is Sean Mershaw. He's a spiritual teacher and new thought minister based in Los Angeles. He graduated from Stanford with a degree in philosophy and religious studies and spent 15 years meditating, studying, practicing, and living in an ashram and spiritual community in Northern California. Sean, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Vicky.
Well, it's a very interesting read, your book. But before we get into that, I want to ask you a couple of things, obviously. It's called The Bliss Experiment, 28 Days to Personal Transformation. And so I just like to kind of define a few words up front. You say bliss is extremely hard to describe, but you say it can be described. So let's just try and touch on that a little bit about how you would normally answer, you know, how do you define bliss?
One of the easiest ways to understand bliss is to talk about it also in relationship to what happiness is. So to begin with, happiness is something that's usually based, at least in part, on external circumstances. So, for example, last night might go out to dinner with some friends, maybe a loved one, have a few drinks, and it seems like a great time. If you talk to me right in that moment, you say, hey, are you happy? Chances are I feel pretty happy right then. However, what usually happens is things like the next morning sets in, and that's when the hangover comes. And so happiness is this thing where it ebbs and it flows and it comes and it goes, and it's very much based on our interactions with our external environment. In comparison, bliss is a completely internal experience. It's an inward feeling of peace, contentment, connectedness, and deep joy. And the really interesting thing about it is that it doesn't matter what's going on outside of us. We could be experiencing really good things in our life, but also really bad, difficult, even tragic things in our life, and we would still have that capacity for bliss.
Right, right. Now, I want to share just a little bit of your background, and then we're going to look at the book, because you base this, the bliss experiment, as you call it, on over 500 scientific studies. And it's based on a workshop that you also teach and stories that people have shared with you over the years. But your own story is very interesting, your own journey from how you were raised Jewish, you went to Stanford, you were looking at, you went worked your way through most of the canon of Western philosophy from Plato and Aristotle, etc. Talk to us a little bit about that journey, that exploration, if you would.
Well, I was that person who was always trying to figure out the meaning of life and what constitutes a good life and what we should be doing. And I was that guy. So the moment I enrolled at Stanford, I put myself straight into the philosophy and religious studies department because I thought that maybe I could read and study and talk my way into figuring out the meaning of life. Unfortunately, what ended up happening is that, first of all, a lot of my professors at Stanford were very depressed people, alcoholics, borderline alcoholics, and we were reading a lot of the great Western canon, but there was a tremendous emphasis on the existentialist philosophers, reading a lot of Kierkegaard and Sartre and Heidegger and Derrida and Foucault and sort of the who's who of the existentialist crowd. And what I found happening was that I was getting more and more depressed. And in turn, I wasn't conscious of it, but I started like drinking more, doing more and more drugs to kind of compensate for it. And one night I went way too far. We were at a big party at Stanford, and I drank too much and took way too many drugs. And I found myself accidentally at the Stanford University hospital emergency room. And I had put my body, they were really worried that I was going to stroke out and die. My heart rate was over 200 beats per minute. And it wasn't just, though, that my body was in danger of dying. The worst part of it was what was going on in my mind. It was was like a dam had broken in my mind, and all my ego was shattered, and I had this intensity of fear, anxiety, depression, panic, terrified of dying, feeling very alone, just this cascade of negative emotions came out. And even the next morning, when I was discharged from the hospital, my body was no longer in danger of dying, my mind was still completely broken. And from that point on, a bunch of other negative things happened. My father was diagnosed with terminal lung cancer. They thought I had damaged my heart so badly that even though I was 20 years old, I was going to need a pacemaker. And I ended up just going into this deep clinical depression, and then started having panic attacks, and then started having drug flashbacks. And I just became a complete and total wreck.
And so from there, you decided, hey, this isn't working for me.
Exactly.
And you felt that life was meaningless almost at that point. And so you decided to, this is when you became more involved in the ashram.
Yeah, what happened was I sort of said, okay, I'm pretty sure life is meaningless and that everything should be depressed. And, you know, I somehow that was truth. But I said to myself, okay, you think you know that, but this is obviously not a healthy way to live. In fact, I was kind of suicidal, and I figured I'm going to try and explore and see if I could find anything positive out there, anything that could show me that maybe my bleak worldview wasn't true. And so I started reading positive spiritual literature, sort of more positive scientific literature, and then I just started doing whatever practices people suggested. Someone said, you should try yoga postures. So I tried that. That was like way before the yoga boom. Someone else said, hey, try meditating. So I started meditating. And eventually I ended up finding this a spiritual community in Northern California. And after I graduated from Stanford, I decided to move there. I was still in a very fragile place. And I just figured I'd go there, heal a little bit, and then go on with my life, whatever was, you know, whatever
right,
I was
right.
going to do. But what happened was, you know, so I thought maybe I'd be there a couple weeks. But what ended up happening is, like, 15 years later, I was still there.
Right, right.
And so that was a main part of my journey. But there was one other really important kind of negative thing that happened. And that was about 7 years ago through a sports injury. I ripped apart my sacroiliac joint. That connects your hip crest with your sacrum. And ever since then, I've been a chronic pain patient. And I had to quit my job. And I spent 2 years lying in bed, basically in a dark room, kind of writhing in pain. And I lost all functionality, lost, you know, everything that I had spent the previous 10, 12 years gaining back. And I went through a really dark time all over again and had to learn how to rebuild my life, even still being a chronic pain patient. And so now I'm still in the same amount of pain that I was in 7 years ago, but I learned how to tap into those inner resources and that wellspring of bliss and that capacity to move forward, even in the face of being in chronic pain.
Right. And that's what we're going to talk about in the second segment. We're going to take a quick break right here. My guest is Sean Mershaw. Sean Mershaw, his book is called The Bliss Experiment, 28 Days to Personal Transformation. And you say, Sean, that meaning and purpose are not synonymous. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about that and then look at how we find bliss. Please do stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
Is your job in danger as technology becomes more sophisticated on a daily basis? How do you lower your risk for becoming immobile as business becomes more mobile? Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, Dr. Tracy Willen-Dowgenty, a thought leader on career, will share which jobs could be replaced by robotic technology and, most importantly, how you can stay relevant in today's market. Join us Monday at noon Pacific time on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See guest details at conversationslive.net. Did you know that capsizing boats and people falling overboard account for over 70% of boating fatalities? 80% of those fatalities occur on boats under 26 feet and on boats with operators who've had no formal boating instruction. 50% of all boating accidents involve alcohol. Be smart this summer. Know who you're boating with. Wear a Coast Guard-approved life jacket, and don't drink and boat. This message is brought to you by supporters of Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair and the JMB Group, who wish you safe boating fun.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Going against the grain has never been so much fun. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
The camera pans, the cocktail glass, behind a blend of plastic plants. Find the lady with the fat.
And welcome back, everyone. We are talking in this segment about the Bliss Experiment. It's a new book by Sean Mershaw. He is a spiritual teacher and New Thought minister based in Los Angeles. And as he shared in the first half of this segment, spent his life so far in search of bliss. But I know you found it, Sean, and this is why you teach it and write it now. I want to just, before we get into some of the aspects of the book, and actually this is from the book, but you say meaning and purpose are not synonymous. Now, a lot of people would maybe argue that point. So explain to us what you mean.
What I mean in this context is, and in the context of bliss and our search for truth, is that meaning is the external framework of the universe. It's the very nature of how the universe operates. It's impersonal laws, the very fabric of existence. So, you know, at a scientific level, you could say the laws such as gravity and relativity and quantum mechanics and thermodynamics are expressions of a physical framework of the universe. And there are deeper frameworks of the universe, of deeper spiritual truths, for example, of how the world works. For example, things like, you could say, the law of karma or do unto others, or however you put it. These are deeper kinds of objectively true frameworks that have nothing to do with what we choose to believe or not believe. We can't change whether gravity exists or not. We can't change whether we could eat metal nails instead of nourishing food. Our bodies just don't work that way. Now, purpose, on the other hand, is how each of us individually relates to that overall framework of meaning. So there's one meaning structure in the universe, but each of the 5 or 6 billion inhabitants of Earth have their own specific purpose, which is their own unique way of relating to that framework, our own things that each one of us is individually called to do, and our own ways of kind of integrating into the great harmony and symphony of life. And that is highly specific, highly individual. My purpose is not going to be the same as your purpose.
Right, right. And we're always at choice on this. And I think this is something that we must remember, because I do believe we can make a choice to be happy, you know, or not. You talk about there's an article, I think it was in the Huffington Post, about finding happiness in a bad economy. And you share a well-known scientific study that provides quite a bit of insight on that very subject, where you talk about the lottery winners versus the paraplegics.
Yes, this is a really key thing to understand. And when we can really grasp the findings of this scientific study, which I want to just emphasize is a mainstream research. You know, this stuff is not out of like the Journal of New Age Studies or something, not to you know, pick on that.
But, it's a valid study.
This is real stuff. And so in this study, what they found is that researchers looked at two groups of people. The first group were people who won the lottery and became instant millionaires. So they had their dreams come true, something that we would all think would be this wonderful thing to have happen. And the second group of people they looked at were accident victims, people who became paraplegic in a tragic kind of accident. So what they found was that with the lottery winners, there was an incredible spike in their happiness up to the six-month mark. But by the 12-month mark, the lottery winners, instant millionaires, were now no happier than prior to them winning the lottery, and in many cases were less happy than when they won the lottery. Conversely, the accident victims, of course, as we would all guess, had a tremendous drop in their happiness levels right after going through the accident. But by the 12-month mark, the accident victims had completely regained their pre-accident levels of happiness and were now, on average, as a group, happier than the lottery winners. So, I mean, this is an incredible finding, and it tells us so many different important things, where what was really going on with the accident victims is this terrible thing happened, and it forced them to do a tremendous amount of inner work and tap into their inner resources. And it was that inner work that ended up making them learn, or helping them learn, how to be happier, more productive, more joyful people, even in the face of the adversity.
Yeah. We did a show a couple of weeks back with a neuroscientist who specializes in optimism and pessimism. And a lot of what she talked about was how we adapt to life. And you say the same thing in this article. It's, you know, our ability to adjust and adapt to what's thrown at us, ultimately.
Yes. We have this tremendous capacity to adapt, and it works both ways. So the paraplegics were able to adapt to the negative circumstances, but on the flip side, this is one reason why wealth and luxury goods don't really help us, is scientists talk about something called hedonic adaptation. So a very clear example of it is, say you walk into a room, and it smells either really, really good or really, really bad. And you notice that smell right away. But then if you stay in that room, what happens?
Yeah, you get used to it.
We get used to it. We stop noticing it. And so this is what happens with wealth and luxury goods, is we stop noticing them. We start taking them for granted. And the allure that they gave us, that little boost, it wears off pretty quickly. And so it can't give us any kind of long-term satisfaction.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about affirmations, because, you know, they've never really worked for me. And you said the same in your book. You kind of laughed at affirmations. But then there came a point when you changed your mind on that. You know, we kind of think if somebody is unhappy, they might, you know, write on post-its and stick on the mirror, "I am at bliss. I found my bliss." But tell us what the transition was like for you.
Well, I was definitely, I'm kind of skeptical by nature. It's my academic background, I guess. And I always thought affirmations were these ridiculous things that Al Franken parodied on Saturday Night Live, you know, the Stuart Smalley kind of thing. And I never believed them until I saw a Scientific American article that showed, they looked at a group of urban inner city African American children who were consistently scoring lower than sort of the white suburban upper class kids that, you know, were in the greater area. And what they did is they had the African American kids, they taught them for a year, like every day before school, they would do an affirmation of their self-worth, their self-esteem, and without any other changes, no curriculum changes, no changes to the teacher's ratio or anything like that, over the course of the year, the African-American children were able to raise up their test scores to virtually the same level as the white suburban kids. And the only thing that changed was that kind of internal dialogue and affirmations that the children were telling themselves about their worth, about their capabilities. And that made me realize how powerful that an affirmation, when it's properly done,
can be. Right. And we're right at the end of our segment, but to do it properly, we have to really believe it and feel it, correct?
And it has to be written in the right way, in a positive way.
In the affirmative.
Way, and it has to be repeated internally in the right way. And you can get the instructions for how to do that in the Bliss Experiment book.
Yes, the Bliss Experiment, 28 Days of Personal Transformation. My guest here, Sean Mershaw, and I'll spell out his website for you. It's SEANMESHOREER.com. And if you missed any of that, you can always reach me at 800-495-7617 or conversationslive.net. You can reach me at info@conversationslive.net. I thank Sean for being with us today, and thank you for joining us. We'll be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong. Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.